Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
And we welcome you in. Glad you're along for the ride. Our new drug today is another beautiful hot day as we are well into May. Glad you're with us, Frangie Carline LaSelva. Did you lock in for the Derby?
I did.
Were you?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I didn't join until probably about 45 minutes until post time.
Yeah.
You know, so, but what I watched, I certainly enjoyed in terms of the pre-race, and then it was the greatest Derby that we've seen in quite some time.
When you said I didn't join until, I'm thinking, bro, it's not very long.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
The until. Had
right.
You, the
until I hear down the stretch they come, I'm right. Not tuning in. Right. No, I, you know, sometimes I really will enjoy watching like a couple hours before. I had, you know, the kids' things going on, so I didn't watch as much of the pre coverage as I would have, but I did like it. I thought they did a really nice job with it, and obviously the race was sensational.
Ocala's own JJ LaSelva, you had to be locked in, right?
I was locked in. I lost like five races leading up to the Derby and the Derby.
Okay. Oh, you did?
Made no money.
Wow.
Yes, it was an eventful Saturday, but very fun.
Okay, so there you go. What, and I will say, again, I don't know much about horse racing, but what a finish. I mean, what an incredible. It's interesting, isn't it, that in that sport that it ends and you don't know who won. Yeah, I mean that's one of the charms of horse racing, obviously, but it ends and you don't know who won.
It was the first time since 1947 that they had a three-horse photo finish.
Yeah,
I mean, so it really was watching history. They've done this thing 150 times, and that was the 10th time ever that it's been decided by a nose, let alone having three right at the finish. So, yeah, spectacular race. Some, you know, elements of surprise. Fierceness was the favorite, finished 15th.
Right.
And it's interesting now because now you're starting to see more stories about it's more lucrative for the Derby champion to just basically retire and start, you know, the—
Which is terrible.
I know.
This new trend of, like, them sitting out the next race needs to end.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, I financially, though, it's hard to argue with. If you race Mystic Dan in the Preakness, and he breaks down, then you lose all your money. If he never races again, as a Derby champion alone, obviously you're going to get stud fees that are going to be incredibly lucrative for a very long time.
Hasn't
it always been like that, though?
It has.
I mean, now they're just they don't care about the Triple Crown. That's all.
But like, I assume the answer to that is. And listen, you couldn't know less about this than I do, but I know common sense. I don't care if you're in tiddlywinks, horse racing, baseball, football, or whatever. There's more money than ever in whatever, right? I mean, whatever the best horse, the best breeding horse would get you 10 years ago, it's exponentially higher now. At some point when the money gets so high, prestige takes – that's what you're saying. Takes a backseat to the money. I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, it is a business, and you know, I hope that Mystic Dan goes to the Triple Crown. I do think it's lost some of the luster because for a while we didn't have one. It was one of the last real sports feats that I had yet to see in my lifetime,
like 40 years.
Yeah, right. And finally we had a Triple Crown winner, so. Again, obviously the price would go up if Mystic Dan completed the Triple Crown, but I can't really fault them for at least looking at it and saying, you know, is it worth putting him out there?
Right, I get
when you're racing for, you know, the fear of losing millions and millions and millions of dollars if, God forbid, something happens to him on the track.
Yeah. So, JJ, any chance Mystic Dan has a if Mystic Dan doesn't get pulled, realistic chance to win the Triple Crown or no?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah,
of course. What do you think?
It's just so difficult. I mean, it's
yeah, I
it's.
Mean, what are they saying?
I don't think it's a special horse. I mean, it wasn't the favorite in this race. It won by a millimeter.
Yeah.
So to suggest that it's now going to go win the Preakness and then win the marathon, that's the Belmont. I would say it's a very long shot that this horse is going to win the Triple Crown.
It was an amazing race that it at least to me, didn't look like it was going to be a photo finish. until the last however many lengths.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, that was what was the surprising part about it. Anyway, so interesting. A Kentucky Derby behind us, and I'm glad you didn't join late. Well said.
Mike Tirico, by the way, has like the greatest career because he covers everything.
Yeah.
Like,
and he'll be at the Olympics.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's Mike Tirico at the Kentucky Derby. Yeah. I mean, it's, it is, and he does a great job with everything.
He's good at everything.
Yeah.
He's good. He has a soothingness.
Yeah.
He's a soothing voice. No matter what's gone wrong in my life, when I hear Tirico, I feel better.
I do,
he
too.
He just kind of soothes
if
you.
If Mike Tirico ever starts talking fast, yeah, I'm going to panic because I'm going to assume aliens are invading the planet.
No question.
Because I think that's about the only thing that would speed him up.
Very soothing. Very soothing. Hey, a lot of things to get to today on the program. I'm going to have a fun. So you're not a numbers guy. Brian Thomas is wearing seven.
Seven.
Did
I saw that.
You did see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he didn't have to pay Zay Jones anything for it.
He didn't have to pay Zay Jones. I still wonder if now that he's got seven, now he's got something to trade. Because seven's a better number than 11. I mean, seven's a great number. Seven's probably the best number. You don't know because you don't follow numbers, which is a shame.
Well, it's 007.
Seven's like the best number in sports, isn't it? I mean, if you had to pick a number, what's the best number in sports?
Seven, I could listen to an argument only because Costanza was going to name his son seven.
Okay, so that makes sense.
After Mickey Mantle.
JJ, what's the best number? Is seven the best number in sports?
I was going to say 23, just because so many people emulate it now. And
I hear you. It's a good argument.
And I'm 34.
Yeah. One great player made 20. One player, 23 had no heritage at all. 23 was like the most invisible number ever in sports until Mike came along.
Right.
And then now all of a sudden it's a great number.
Isn't one like the best number?
One's a great number.
Yeah.
One's a great number. I think seven.
You like seven better.
Seven, three.
Because of Warfel?
No, just seven. It's a great number. I mean, Mantle.
Yeah.
Or I mean, you go all day on sevens. Three is a great number. You mm-hmm. know, but
well, he's got a good number. He's got a better number than, what was it, 80, I think, is what he told us.
He was never going to wear 80. So, but I wonder now, do you take seven, which is a good number, and throw in a little cash, like $100, and go to Parker Washington and say, Parker, I got seven and 100. I got $100 and
100
seven.
$100.
I got $100 and seven. I got a C
I feel
note.
Like $100 to us is a little different.
Parker, I got a C note with your name on it and seven.
Right.
Parker's got to think that through. I mean, it's not just seven. It's $100, okay?
Again, if I was Parker Washington and somebody wanted to give me money for a number,
it,
from what I've seen far of his professional career, I would take it.
Okay. How about the JJ, what if he throws in like a gift certificate to Outback? Does that change
it? Oh, gosh.
$100
I will say this. Lately, the Bloomin' Onions have been lacking.
Yeah, I mean
not know, like they used to be.
So really?
Oh, my God. There's no onion in it.
I haven't been in there in a long time, but that's disappointing.
And I hope they don't sponsor any show on this station.
I haven't either, but a Bloomin' Onion without the onion would be
would
disappointing.
Would that be difficult?
Yeah, it's basically just like, you know.
A Bloomin' batter?
The breading.
Yeah.
A lot of breading.
Wow.
So that's very disappointing.
Very
disappointing.
Maybe did you just maybe insult the server and then they told the cook to
I think
not
everyone's
make it
just
right?
been they've been cutting back lately.
That's a shame.
So, cutting corners, as they say.
Yeah, Bloomin' Onion without the onion is not good. I doubt it will
not
tell you.
Good.
Okay, so, anyway, I think $100 and maybe like a Rally's gift certificate or something. I think $100, you got to crack it.
Rally's.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
again, I would take that deal.
If you had 80,
number
80 didn't have any equity in it. Seven's a good number. I mean, if I'm Parker Washington, I'm thinking I got a chance to get seven and $100. I got to think through that. I mean, that's not life changing.
This is a story that obviously we will really document during OTAs and rookie minicamp, and we'll get to the bottom of this.
But I tell you what, we are going to do today, and we're going to start our show this, and we're going to do a shout today too. By the way, I think it's a real shout. What are the expectations of Brian Thomas Jr.? What do people think? Is he the next Jimmy Smith? And we finally have a megastar receiver that this franchise hasn't had in 26 years. Is it? Is he? And I'm going to go through the litany of misses, and it's scary. We all know them. I'm not breaking any news to anybody, but when you start lining up the misses at wide receiver in the 30 years that there's been a franchise here, it's almost comical. That you could miss that badly
is comical,
on that position. So we'll do a shout in the 5 o'clock hour. What do people think? Do they think he's going to be great? Do they think he's going to be okay? I think it's a fun topic. What people expect for Brian? What do you think? I mean, 10 years from now or 7 years from now, when we look back at what Brian Thomas Jr. was, what do you think? Where do you think that will land?
Good, not great, is where I think it'll land. I think it helps. Again, we talk about it with quarterbacks, but it's the same at receiver. We talk about the environment that they're in. He's in a good environment here. because he doesn't step in having to be the focal point of the passing attack. That'll still be Christian Kirk and Evan Engram and even maybe Gabe Davis. So the environment allows him to comfortably get settled in. He's got what I think is going to be a good quarterback. I don't know about phenomenal quarterback, but I think he's going to have a good quarterback. And possibly very good. So that's certainly helpful. He's playing for an offensive-minded head coach. That certainly helps. So all of those things factor in his favor. I would kind of agree that he probably needs a couple of years before you can really expect 1,200, 1,300 yards and 8 or 9, 10 touchdowns. So I think the long-term plan is get him up to speed. Obviously, he's going to play a lot. We know that because of where he was drafted. But have him be a nice supplemental part of the offense this year where that supplement's going to be big because he's going to be a big play guy. That I don't doubt. I mean, we're not going to be looking at a stat line next year where it's like 30 catches for 310 yards and he's at 10.1 yards a catch. I mean, when he does catch the ball in this league, it's going to be explosive. But I would think that I think somebody was talking about the over-under for him reception-wise as a rookie is like 55 and somewhere in there. There's no chance he's going to catch 55 passes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I would say I would expect 35 catches this year, something like that. But you hope that those 35 catches come with a 16 yards per carry or per reception average.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would – for where this offense is – that would be a big missing component from what they've had.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. I think the interesting thing about this is they don't need one star player. I think the balance of what I think they'll have at the four receiving spots, and I'm including move tight end in there, if he's pretty good, could be really special. You know what I mean? It could be really special stuff. So we'll get to that coming up in a bit. JJ did. Did the Dodgers pull out the brooms? Is that what happened?
Whoa. It was a rough weekend for a Braves fan, but I tried to tell you guys.
Yeah, you did.
The Phillies are the team in the National League right now. They're now in first. They had a sweep as well against the Giants. Yeah, the Braves' bats are struggling the last few weeks, and they got swept in Los Angeles. Now a day off. It's like baseball, you really, after a sweep, you really want to get back out there, obviously, and that day off sucks. But, yeah, it looks like the Braves have some they have to wake their bats up. That's really it. Their pitching's been pretty solid this year.
They need hats for bats.
We definitely need hats for bats.
Yeah, hat for bats. Hazel, you at a point where you're panicking.
Yes, I didn't sleep all weekend. My life, as you know, is a living hell when the Braves aren't playing good baseball, and so it was very difficult for me to see Shohei Ohtani hitting every pitch that he saw 465 feet out of the park. But I have full confidence in the Atlanta Braves. The cream will rise to the top. The Phillies, I think, are an utter joke and will fall apart, and I fully expect the Atlanta Braves to win another division title and this year get hot at the right time and go to the World Series. Okay. So it's a blip. Congratulations to the Dodgers. Enjoy it now, but I am not overly concerned.
I'm glad you feel a little better. I will say this. The Braves, I think, still have the best team. Boy, JJ's right, though. The Phillies are good, and not just because they're hot now. The Phillies, if Trey Turner ever got going, JJ, you knew that would be – you know, he never really found himself there. But not the Phillies.
And they're having, like, amazing performances by their pitching staff. You know, Suarez has turned into Cy Young all of a sudden, and you knew their bats are always going to be good. They've knocked the Braves out of the playoffs 2 years in a row. Right. You know, this is a great team. I think they're going to actually win the East this year. And, yeah, that'll be six in a row. This would be seven in a row, Hayes, if we get it done. But I think it ends at six this year.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, so you like
a May 6th prediction.
You like the Phillies to win the East, though?
Oh, yeah. I think the Phillies are much better than the Braves this year. I said that before the season. Yeah. I'm sticking with it.
Well, there are an awful lot of people that pick the Phillies to go to the World Series. I've seen that. I mean, some of the national guys have picked the Phillies. We'll get to that. Something else we're going to get to today. Who's the most prominent televised sports talking head? Is it
Stephen A. Smith?
Is he more than McAfee? Or is it?
Well,
I mean, who's the most prominent?
McAfee, I almost don't. When you ask me that question, I think of somebody who is totally based in journalism.
And Stephen A. came to my mind first.
Yeah, and he's always been on the media side of things. He's not so McAfee and Barkley are different to me because, and for different reasons. Barkley was a much more accomplished athlete than Pat McAfee, but I think Pat McAfee being an athlete has given him the ability to corral some guests and people like that that maybe he would not have been able to do, you know, had he come from the media solely. But I would think in terms of just pure journalist, I would think it's Stephen A. Smith.
People who don't follow sports don't know who Pat McAfee is.
I agree.
Like, my wife would have no idea. My wife knows who Barkley and Stephen A. are.
Interesting.
You know, she would have
He's
no idea
He's still relatively
who Pat McAfee
new. I mean, three
yeah,
years ago,
very new.
Pat McAfee was probably a very minor part of national media.
The show's probably less than a year old on TV.
So who else is in play?
We're talking just purely a journalist.
Yeah, no, talking head in sports. It doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter if he's a journalist, former player.
Kornheiser.
Is Kornheiser still in play?
Yeah, I mean that show's still on.
Skip
Bayless.
Oh yes,
Bayless
yeah.
In play? I mean, I think he'd have from a name recognition.
Yeah, yeah.
Shannon Sharp has become like. Yeah. A
I think
huge.
Strahan would have to be high
Strahan,
up on that list.
Strahan, I think, is very high.
Particularly
up on
if you're talking about just average citizen that would recognize and know who he is.
Yeah,
because he does all the stuff on Good Morning America.
Well, then
too.
We're going Jesse Palmer.
Jesse Palmer
certainly is important.
He doesn't do sports really.
Yeah,
but
that's.
But he does. I mean, again,
he calls games.
Yeah,
does he?
Yeah, he does college football still. I think.
Yeah, he does do college football.
And obviously, most of his career is, to your point, it's more on the pop culture side of things.
Yeah.
But
yes, so yeah. So I'm gonna get to who. And who do people like?
What about Hacker Ryan the Hacker Green?
He's obviously the biggest.
By the way, he's first.
Yeah.
But I figured it's not.
Four-time winner of the Peabody.
There's no point in having a conversation that there's no debate.
Who, by the way, right. will be on at 6 this week.
We got Hack this week?
Yes.
How about that?
Blue Vacation, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think it's on a staycation, as they call it.
Staycation, okay. So there you go. So it would be good to have Hacker in there. So
I was sorry that his magic didn't pull it out.
Yeah. I know I'm going to be hearing about that tonight.
But yeah, but I think the consensus is that the future is very bright, right?
You get to a game seven and have an 18-point lead.
Yeah.
You know, you'd like to close that out.
Anytime one gets away. That's right. But I think.
But you're right. Yeah, I think they're very young, and now they can add pieces, and we'll see. Maybe they'll even add Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill.
Yeah. So there's a. By the way, power pull out. JJ, Orioles, Phillies, Dodgers, Braves. You buy it?
Who do I like out of those? In order.
Yeah. Do you like the order?
No, the Orioles are not number one to me. I think if it gets down to the playoffs, they don't have the pitching staff that those others do. I love the Orioles. You know, they're one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. You know, I think they'll probably win the East. But, no, when it comes down to it, I love the Phillies. I love the Dodgers. I love the Braves over the O's.
Okay, yeah. I still think the Braves have a better team. Now, I'm saying that after they just got swept. But I think when totally healthy – when everybody's healthy, and not having Strider is a gigantic gut punch to that, you know. But I still think they're the best team. So we'll see. We'll follow. Have you watched? By the way, we haven't talked about this because it's not our thing. I know you talk about it with Rick at night, JJ. You watching the hockey? Anyone watching the hockey?
We actually are. We're watching the Panthers. The Panthers play tonight at 8 o'clock, and I watched the Bruins game that went to overtime against the Leafs the other day. So I'm actually kind of enjoying it. I'm like 47 years old, and I'm becoming a hockey fan.
That's because with Gene.
I still don't know the rules, but it's fun just to watch. It's kind of, I will say this, it's kind of refreshing to like not know the rules. So like I don't get hung up on what the coach should do or why is this player doing that? Because I have no idea about hockey strategy. So I just honestly am sitting back, enjoying it, watching, you know, the athleticism of it, the coordination it requires, the toughness it requires. And I'm really enjoying it.
I've watched you pick up teams in sports through Gene.
Right.
Yeah, and so because obviously they're a Panther fan.
Yeah, Gene's like a Heat fan. So last year we enjoyed watching them go to the finals, and she's a her son is big Panthers fan.
And they lived in South Florida forever.
Yeah.
Last
year they went to the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals on back-to-back nights in Miami.
Isn't that cool?
Gene and her son John. Yeah.
But it's not like Gene and her son John randomly picked teams. They lived down there.
They lived down there.
That was the team in their area. So, all right. Our first top. Oh, by the way, did they enjoy Luke Combs?
They did, yeah.
I'll say this.
Jean went both nights. And
she went to both of them.
She went to both of them. She went to Friday night, she went with John, and then Saturday she went with her younger brother, Billy. And, she thought he was phenomenal.
I'll say this. I didn't go because it's not my thing. To sell enough tickets to do two stadium shows, that's not two arena shows. That's back-to-back stadium shows. Man, that's pretty good stuff. You know that? I mean, again, it's not my. I don't know other than Fast Car because it was a Tracy Chapman song. I don't know any of his music, but I will say this: to come to a city like Jacksonville and to go back to back stadium shows, I don't remember anyone ever doing that. I've seen. I mean, I remember when the Stones came here 100 years ago, and more recently, a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever. I saw the Jackson Victory Tour, man. I've seen so many stadium shows in that stadium and in other stadiums, but I'm telling you, I can't remember anybody going back to back in a stadium.
I can't either. I think it is historic for our city.
There's probably only like a handful of artists in the world who could do that. Yeah, you know, back to back nights, big city, sell out.
And I don't know that it's ever been a thing until recently.
Maybe that's it.
I mean, it could have. Could other acts have done it?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't think it's become sort of a popular thing for an artist to do until
there's a lot of bands and acts, U2 and Springsteen and Garth Brooks, who do 4 or 5 nights in a row in an arena and pack it every time, and that's a thing. But back to back nights when you're selling, I don't know,
70,000,
yeah, something, right, 50,000 to 70,000 tickets go back to back, and everybody that went loved it, man. So that's pretty good stuff, no question about it. All right, we're gonna talk some Brian Thomas in a minute, but. Speaking of music, Carlion.
Ooh.
Wow. We have got the best anthems of the rock era, Piano Man and Stairway, in the same bracket.
Really?
You heard the bracket, Piano Man.
Wow.
Don't Stop.
It's like
Stairway.
The group of death.
I mean, that is
the group of death.
That's quite.
So Don't Stop Believing got a kind of a lucky draw.
Yeah, they're all in the bracket together.
Oh, they're in. Yeah. Don't Stop's in there too.
Yeah.
Wow.
How about that bracket? I mean, again, there's only 16 spots. We've had a lot of music. Wow. We are going to vote on the best anthem of the rock era. We'll have our first four band poll tomorrow. Remember, we've had three bands, so that's coming up. So that's good stuff. What that is.
That is.
Stairway to Heaven. Is one of the, you knew they'd make the 16.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no doubt about that. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Jaguars' newest, hopeful, really good receiver. That's next. Stay with us. Really makes me wonder.
It's a Best Bet Monday on The Frangie Show with fantastic locations in Jacksonville, Orange Park, and now in St. Augustine. It's Best Bet.
Frangie and Carlion LaSelva with you. Thanks for stopping by on a Monday, brought to you by our friends at The Best Bet. We sure appreciate our friends at The Best Bet. Always a Best Bet Monday around here. Look, you can get in on the action on Best Bet Live. See the full schedule. Sign up to play. On the featured table, you find out all about it. Go to Best Bet Jax, that's JAX, bestbetjax.com. And oh, by the way, the Poker Atlas Tour, which is really renowned, coming to Best Bet St. Augustine from June 6th through the 16th. So put that on your calendars as well. The Best Bet Monday, always a Best Bet Monday here on the program. The Jaguars, Brian Thomas Jr. Hayes, was the fifth wide receiver the Jaguars have taken in the first round. The other four, for those that missed it, R.J. Soward.
Not good.
Reggie Williams.
Not great.
Matt Jones.
Definitely not good.
The Thrillbilly.
Yeah.
Justin Blackmon.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And they've been so scarred after Justin Blackmon, it took them 12 years to draft another wide receiver in the first round. It's uncanny. The lack of how bad that went every time they drafted a receiver in the first round.
What's amazing about those four is the just gigantic character issues that they just none of those administrations just totally missed on or ignored. But I mean, when you rattle off those names. Other than, you know, Reggie Williams, I think was, you know, I didn't cover him, but my understanding was that was more of just he just didn't work out as a player. He had like one good year, but
had a
just,
10 touchdown
yeah,
year,
but season. Just really didn't work out as a player. The other three had massive off the field concerns. And again, it's just you rolled the dice and they got really burned on all three of those. And, you know, the good news with Brian Thomas is that, you know, there's nothing there like that. So, I would think if this one doesn't work out, it will be purely he just wasn't talented enough to become a big-time NFL player. But what's the most striking about that is those were self-inflicted mistakes because they should have known better on all those accounts.
I will tell you, of all the four, who would have been the best without the stuff?
Blackman.
No question. Justin Blackman.
He was really good.
Angry, physical, tough receiver. I mean, he would have been a legendary player. He didn't even have 100 career catches.
Yeah.
He had 6 career touchdowns because obviously all the off-field problems. Matt Jones was a wide receiver or was a quarterback.
That was an arrogant pick.
Till he got here.
Arrogant pick. Boy, was that an arrogant pick. The guy's never played this position.
Right.
Let's take him in the first round of the NFL draft.
And turn him into a receiver.
Yeah, it's just complete arrogance.
R.J. Soward, you know how many career catches he had? Take a guess.
9.
Career catch. 14 career catches.
Yeah, I mean it.
Career!
And that's one that, I mean, you didn't have to scout hard to know at USC that R.J. Soward was a problem.
I mean,
you know, that was just, again, there was some arrogance in that pick of, you know, well, we'll mold him. And again, it's you can't count on that.
Let's say a guy makes it 9 years in the league and he has averages 50 catches a year. That's probably
450 catches.
450 catches. 9 years is he play, and that doesn't make you a particularly good player, by the way.
No.
If you have 50 catches a year, you're an average player.
Right.
Okay? That's 450 catches. None of these four guys got the 200 in their careers. None of them got the 200 catches in their careers. And 450 makes you an average player, right? Would you say that?
I would.
An average.
I mean, I would say if you catch 450 passes in the NFL, you've had at least you've had a decent career.
Right. If you never caught more than 50 in a year, you probably never went to a Pro Bowl. Yeah, but Hayes, none of these guys got the 200 catches. So it's been R.J. Soward, the story goes, and you've heard the stories. Tom Coughlin had to send someone to wake him up so he could make meetings on time. Send someone to wake him up.
Not good.
Is a first-round draft pick.
Yeah. DJ Chark has 212 career catches, just to give you some idea you know, a player that's...
Yeah. Okay. 212 career. And still playing.
Still playing. Yeah. He's 27.
Yeah. But, I mean, DJ Chark could finish his career with 300 catches.
Right.
You know, none of these guys made it to 200
right.
for their career.
That's what I'm saying. DJ Chark already has 212.
Right,
and he's had one good year in the league, and the rest have been pretty forgettable.
So along comes Brian Thomas. And again, this will be our shout in the 5 o'clock hour. How good do you think? What are your expectations? So along comes Brian Thomas. Hayes, I've got good expectations for him. I think the program was legit. I think it helped him to play in that SEC. I think that matters. I think he's got both measurables and traits. It's interesting because he was there with Neighbors, because he was there on a team that it was a good team, but certainly never moved the needle in terms of playoff competitor. And because Jaden Daniels was so good that there's a lot of people that thought, well, he played with great players. He's a pretty good player, man. He is the 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", 210 pounds isn't a lie. The 4'3", 3 isn't a lie. If you had that, but without the productivity, I'd say he's a tester, not a player. The 17 freaking touchdowns is not a lie. If you had that without the traits, I'd say he might have played in a passing offense. You know, I'm sure somewhere along the line, somebody at Oklahoma or Kansas in the Big 12 had 15 touchdowns. And he seems mature. If you go back and watch his tape, and you know me, I love to do that. I love to watch the tape. There's some advanced level stuff. The double moves, the way he catches the ball in his hands. You never know how that's going to work against NFL cornerbacks, but he did it against SEC cornerbacks, which is the next best thing. Okay, the next best thing to doing it against the NFL competition, if you're talking about a league, I got a hunch he's going to be a really good player. Now, I don't know what the numbers are going to say, because Christian Kirk's going to catch a bunch of balls, and Evan Ingram's going to catch a bunch of balls, and Gabe Davis isn't going to have the volume of catches, but he's going to catch some of the deep balls. But I think that's perfect that he doesn't have to come be a star here. But boy, I think he's going to be a really good. When Trayvon Walker was the first overall pick, I can't tell you, I thought, wow, he's going to be a superstar. I said, man, I hope he takes to it. I hope he develops some pass rush moves. But I can't. I'd be lying if I said the minute he got here, I thought, whew, superstar. Trevor, I thought that and still think it. But of the first round picks in recent years, I'm trying to think how many guys they took in recent years that Anton Harrison, I thought he'd be good. And maybe still will be, but maybe with the tackle, it's hard to get excited.
He's better than what we thought, I would say.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's a good, damn good player.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm talking about what I thought when they drafted
him.
Devin Lloyd was the second pick in the Trayvon draft. I heard good things about him, but I don't think I thought he was Lawrence Taylor, you know? Travis Etienne was in the Trevor draft. I liked Etienne. He's better than I thought he would be. Hey, I thought he'd be good. He's better than I thought he would be. I never was excited about Chaisson. It's easy to say that now, but I wasn't because I saw big Alabama tackles push him around. C.J. Henderson, I was never excited about because I had watched him at Florida. Josh Allen, I was. Josh Allen's a guy that I thought might become a great player. It was Taven Bryan before that. It was Fournette. Jalen Ramsey, I was excited about. So, but you see the point?
Yeah.
I think this guy might be a really good player, and I don't know that everybody else feels that way, but I think before it's over, they might have – this is the first time for me, just for me, not counting Trevor. Trevor's the first overall pick. This is the first time since Josh Allen that I've been as excited about a first-round draft pick as I am this guy.
Yeah, he's certainly a exciting prospect. The caution I would throw out in terms of immediate success for Brian Thomas is it took him 2 years to get going at LSU. So he had 359 yards in 12 games in 2001. He had 361 yards in 2022 in 13 games. So obviously he had 2 years of college where he really was a big time afterthought. Then to his credit, the light came on in his third year in college and he was a superstar. He did have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback throwing him the ball. He did have a top six receiver in the NFL draft on the other side. So certainly that helps, but it's hard to argue with the production that he put up in the final year. So my guess is he's going to take some time to acclimate. You're probably not going to see gaudy numbers in year one or year two, but that's not uncommon. It used to be more of a thing with the receiver position 10, 15 years ago, where year three used to be the magic year for receivers. So he might be a little bit of a throwback in that the first 2 years may be you see flashes, but not consistent production. But I do think he will get there because I have confidence in him and what's around him. But I do think they'll be an acclimation point. One thing in terms of how he might compare with Trayvon early is Trayvon's rookie year, while the numbers for him were not there, you could see how offenses were prioritizing him in terms of how they blocked him. So while his numbers weren't incredible, you could see the attention and the respect the opponent was giving him. I think you're going to see that with Brian Thomas, even if the numbers aren't strong early, because of the athleticism that he has, that size-speed combo, you're going to have to honor that. So I would not be surprised if we're having a conversation in October of, well, his numbers aren't like, you know, jaw-dropping, but doesn't it feel like there's more room for Kirk and Ingram, and doesn't it feel like his presence is helping the offense, much like I think Trayvon Walker's presence started to really help the defense, particularly in the second half of his rookie year. So I think it could be kind of that road, but I do think eventually he is going to get there and be one of the better players to come out of this draft.
That'll be our shout in the 5 o'clock hour, about 5:20 or so. Let us know what you think your expectations for the Jaguars' first-round draft pick. We'll take a break. Headlines are next. Stay with us.
Ladies and
and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather round.
It's Hayes's Headlines, presented by Harrell and Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve. Hear all about it. Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, JJ LaSelva. I am Hayes Carline. Thank you to our friends at Harrell and Harrell. Give them a call, 251-1111. Let's dive right in, Frank, with Zay Jones visiting the Titans. Does this concern you?
No, it doesn't. I think I like Zay Jones. I'm a fan of Zay's. I think he's a really good person, a good player. But I think he's a third or fourth receiver, and I don't know that a third or fourth receiver scares you. And that's no disrespect to Zay at all. He had a very classy departure from here, as you knew he would. I wish him only the best. I hope it's not the Titans, so it's easier to root for him if he's not playing for a rival. It'd be hard to root for him. But if he winds up with the Titans, that one doesn't really move the needle with.
How much do you think he helped Ridley?
No question. I can tell you. I guess I can tell you now. I mean, it's sometimes you know stuff that you don't talk about. But he helped him a great deal. He helped him with the playbook. He helped him where to line up. He helped him understand what the defenses were doing. I can tell you that happened a lot. I can definitively tell you that. And he was a big part of Calvin Ridley's success when they were on the field together, helping Calvin understand kind of what they were doing. That is a fact. I can tell you that's a fact.
We talked about this to open up the show, but what a Kentucky Derby, a three-horse photo finish for the first time since 1947. Just to give you an idea, actor Richard Jenkins, the dad in Step Brothers, was born in May of 1947. Just an incredible race. Tons of people, too. 156,710 attended the Kentucky Derby. It set ratings marks, and Mystic Dan's win nets $3.1 million.
It's amazing to me how a sport has such an incredible moment and extended moment, if you count the Preakness and the Belmont later on, yet never moves the needle in the public consciousness any other time. I mean, golf has an amazing moment, the Masters, but you still watch a lot of other golf.
And you know who the golfers are.
Yeah, right.
And like these horses, it's like only 1 year. Only when they're three. You don't watch any horse racing, so you don't know who they are. You really know the trainers. And then the number one guy hasn't even been allowed to race in the last 2 or 3 years. Bob Baffert hasn't even been around.
That's right. But it's I agree. But it's amazing the incredible attention an event gets that you don't pay attention to the sport any other time.
Crazy.
And it is wild, and we'll see what Mystic Dan's owners elect to do with the Preakness. And there's certainly a chance that we may not see him go for the Triple Crown. Getting to the NBA, the Magic couldn't hold a big lead in Game 7 against Cleveland, but optimism for a promising future. JJ, how would you assess where Orlando is?
Well, today's got to feel tough. I mean, even it wasn't like they lost it in the fourth quarter. It was just they didn't score at all in the third quarter. And towards the end of the second, you could tell, like, ooh, the Cavs are getting back into this game. And, yeah, they just need more scoring. Like, they're when Franz Wagner's not hitting shots, that's like their second-leading scorer on the team, so it's basically just Paolo versus everybody on offense. So, yeah, get a couple of scoring guys next season, and I think they could be right where they're – you know, this would have been the first series win in 14 years. I didn't realize that, something like that. So maybe next year get to the second round.
Yeah, that's a good point. Wow, that is quite a drought. Frank, have you seen Anthony Edwards yet for the Timberwolves?
I have.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
a player.
When he was at Georgia, you knew it was in there, but you never know how quickly it's going to translate. We see these guys. We saw Gilgeous Alexander at Kentucky. You never know how quickly it's going to translate, but Anthony Edwards is a great, great player. I agree.
Pulled the upset in Game 1 in Denver. Minnesota is 5-0 in the playoffs. Edwards joined Kobe Bryant as the youngest to put up consecutive 40-point playoff games. So it's going to be really fascinating to see how the Nuggets respond. And if Anthony Edwards can keep this going, and he is going to play in the Olympics. So it's interesting because it looked like he was headed towards more of a reserve role. But, JJ, if he's playing like this, he's got to be significant minutes.
Absolutely. He's a starter. He's trying to become the new face of basketball. He's trying to take the belt from Jokic. I still like the Nuggets to win this series. It's early days, so tonight is game two. I mean, the Nuggets, it's a must win. They're at home. You can't lose both home games to start the series. So, yeah, take a nap this afternoon, so you can stay up and watch it. 10 p.m. tip-off.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With the transfer portal closing, Joe Lunardi has updated his bracketology for next college basketball season. He has the Gators as a 6 seed, the SEC getting 10 teams in. That is second. The Big Ten is getting a dozen in. He also has the Hurricanes a 6 seed, so it could be a good year for basketball in the state.
Yeah, I get a little bit of a chuckle out of bracketology 6 months, 8 months before the season starts. But, yeah, I think Miami won't be down like that very long. Jim Larrañaga is a very good coach. And I think Florida's found something. I think you're right. I think the SEC has found something. All that money, finally they're putting some of it into basketball. Mike Tranchese joined the league. That helped. Yeah, Florida's found something in basketball. It's a very – again, next year is very – I say this about Mike Norvell and Florida State. I'll say it about Florida too. Can you do it the second and third year after you've done it 1 year? We'll see.
Brooks Koepka won the live event with the PGA Championship approaching. Frank, does he become one of the top contenders?
Well, you know how Brooks is. Yes, number one, yes. He is a top contender.
Defending champion, yeah.
You know how Brooks is. Brooks will win the tournament, or he'll finish 45 over and not make the cut.
Right.
And there's one thing about Brooks Koepka. When he's not in it, he tends to fade. He tends to lose interest.
He's kind of UConn basketball.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
if he goes far, he's going to win the whole thing. But if he doesn't win the national championship, he's not even going to make the tournament.
That's
I mean,
right.
it's almost reminiscent.
Two
of
Two runners
of
what up
the
to the Masters, but yeah. Besides those, it's rough.
Yeah.
If he doesn't win.
Yeah, I think he's obviously Scheffler will be a heavy favorite, but certainly Koepka will be right up there with him. J.J. Watt says he is ready if the Texans need him, Frank. He is 35 years old.
J.J. Watt's not playing for the Texans. You know it. I know it. Our J.J. knows it. Both J.J. to J.J., you know he's not playing for the Texans. What I do think is it's a fun line. It's a fun comment. It'll get him some likes on social. It'll get his foundation some donations. It'll get him extra cheers when they bring him out for J.J. Day or whatever they do. He's not playing for the Texans, and we all know that.
He is in the worst commercial currently on television with Reggie Miller up in, like, a suite.
Miller and Miller.
Yes, and then, like, J.J. Watt climbs in. It's terribly unfunny. I don't even understand, like, what the joke is to the whole thing. It's just like, yeah, it's Luke Wilson in here eating food.
Here's what happened. Owen Wilson was funny, so they said, let's give Luke a job.
Right.
Okay, that's the only reason. It's a very unfunny commercial. I'm with you.
Thank you.
Congrats to Jaguars legend Fred Taylor for graduating from Florida this weekend.
I think that's phenomenal. I think Fred's phenomenal. If anyone that's ever met Fred, what a soft-spoken, gentle-spirited, good man he is. I love the fact that he's having success with the podcast that he's having. I love the fact that he is knocking on the door of the Hall of Fame. I really believe that. And he promised that he would get his degree, and he did. I think it's the coolest thing going.
Absolutely. The WWE announced that WrestleMania 41 will be in Las Vegas next year on April 19th and 20th, Frank.
Will Hacker be there?
He might.
He doesn't go anymore.
Yeah, and Vegas
Once they started a family, Hacker doesn't go anymore.
Yeah.
I may call him on that today.
We may.
When I see him in the hallway.
Yeah, may have to find out. That'll be interesting. All right. The Tom Brady roast was last night. Boy. I mean, first off, let's start. What is this? The Godfather 2? It was 3 hours long.
Was it that long?
It was 3 hours
long. Did you watch the whole thing?
The whole thing. Way too long for anything comedic. Cannot be more than about 90 minutes. So this was double what it should have been. And it was certainly funny, but it was way too long. Bill Belichick, Peyton Manning made some fun appearances and were among the roasters. Brady did appear agitated and early on in one moment. Legendary roastmaster Jeff Ross made a Robert Kraft massage joke, and Brady came up and said, "Don't do that anymore." My guess is that had to be part of the parameters of what was fair game. And I could see Brady being like, "Look, take all the shots you want at me. But don't insult a guy in his 80s that I consider to be a second father."
And he's only here because of me.
Correct. So, but that was the only part where Brady seemed to really be bothered by a joke.
Jeff Ross, sorry to cut you off, but he was probably like, this has to be mentioned at least once.
Right.
How are we going to do an entire roast and not bring up the
misogyny? And I'm expected to be the dark guy.
Right. Exactly.
Well, Jeff Ross has made some jokes that have brought me to my knees during a roast, and that one is not even in the team picture of biggest digs that he's made at people. But yeah, my guess is it's Brady's relationship with Kraft and probably something that was supposed to be kind of not in bounds, and Jeff Ross went there. But then Brady took the stage last, as you do at a roast, and he got some pretty big swings in himself made it pretty personal with Kim Kardashian and things like that. But anyway, I would recommend breaking it up, maybe watching it over three nights, an hour at a time. But it certainly had its moments.
Who do you
where it was hilarious.
Had the best set?
Boy, that's tough. I thought Nikki Glaser had some phenomenal. I think it helped too that she was early, so it was like
people had energy.
Yeah, it's tough when you get to the back half. I think this roast was difficult in that normally you're roasting a comedian or an actor, so you're going to have other comedians and actors up there. When you roast an athlete, like they made special circumstances to have Gronk and Edelman and Belichick and Randy Moss. And so you had this athlete component to it that I think forced just it to be way too long. But again, it's entertaining. I would just break it up, and you can. You don't have to watch all 3 hours at one time. But the Tom Brady roast, it'll be interesting to see what Netflix, what they determine if it was a success or not.
Has to be, right?
You couldn't get on Twitter last night without seeing it.
Even still today.
Yeah, it's certainly, I think, made its mark on social media. All right, we will flash back to May 4th, 1984, Frank. That is when 16 Candles was released in theaters. Yes, this movie is 40 years old. We are old. The iconic coming-of-age comedy was John Hughes' directorial debut.
How about that? 1980. Wow, that's a long time ago. But the what do they call them? The Brat Pack?
Yeah.
That was when they were in their heyday.
That's right. Sure. That launched them. We are going to close headlines with our musical element, a tribute to James Brown. The hardest working man in show business, unfortunately died on Christmas, Christmas Day in 2006 at the age of 73. But we honor his memory by remembering his birthday, which was over the weekend. So happy birthday to the late James Brown, who of course gave us one of the best cameos in movie history in Rocky IV when he belted out Living in America.
The hardest working man in show business. Well done. Well done on headlines. We got an hour to go. We come back, we'll talk FSU Clemson in the ACC. We'll talk a little bit about Talking Heads. And we've got a shout coming up later on in the hour about Brian Thomas Jr. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Best Bet Monday on The Frangie Show with fantastic locations in Jacksonville, Orange Park, and now in St. Augustine. It's Best Bet.
Frangie, Caroline LaSelva, thanks for joining us on this Best Bet Monday. We sure appreciate our friends from the Best Bet. Man, it's a busy month at Best Bet. Get all that tournament and promotion information at Best Bet Jax, that's J-A-X, bestbetjax.com. All kind of fun stuff going on, so head to the Best Bet. You'll love it. You'll love it. You'll love it. You'll have an awful, awful good time, too. They do a wonderful job at the Best Bet, so head to the Best Bet. Three locations now. St. Augustine, the most recent one, is right there, the most recently built one, right there on I-95 as you head down there. You can see it from the highway. The Orange Park location is on 17, and Monument Road is the original location, and it's a big location. It's just the biggie, and you'll love it. The Best Bet does a great job. Suzanne and I, we went to St. Augustine over the weekend. I sometimes forget, because we've all done it a thousand. We've all gone to St. Augustine a thousand times. So you sometimes forget what a fun getaway that is.
Oh, it's a gem.
Yeah, we went down. We just had some time to kill, so we spent the day down there, and we walked all around St. George Street, and it's packed now. Mm-hmm. It's still, like, crazy.
That's the thing. About, like, 10, 15 years ago, it got to the point where it's always packed. Like, it used to be seasonal. Now it's just consistently packed, but it's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we went down there and we did a getaway, and I will tell you, what we do is we go down there, we'll walk around, shop a little bit, and then kind of duck into one of the little bars. There's bars where live music. I love that the St. George Street live music bar scene is pretty cool. You know that? You just walk into one. We saw some local dudes playing. I wrote down their names. I took a picture of their thing on the marquee. Some local dude named Chase Foraker and a dude named Jonathan Lee. No idea, but the Jacksonville guys. They're all these local bands. Mm-hmm. I go see Vox and Cloud Nine, all these great local bands. These guys were really good. We sat there, and I mean, it's all their covers. You know, Jonathan Lee had an original song, but they're mostly covers. But don't you love that? In the middle of the day, on a beautiful day.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of talent around here.
Cocktail.
There might have been some day drinking. So it was a wonderful time down in St. Augustine. So we had a fun little getaway. All right, let me ask you this, Hayes. Let's assume FSU and Clemson get out, because I think at this point the conventional thinking is somehow, some way they're getting out. I think most people believe they're going to get out of the ACC. And the ACC, like it or not, at some point is going to have to move on without at least FSU and Clemson. And then we'll see North Carolina, Miami, and the rest. But let's assume FSU and Clemson somehow, some way buy their way out. They're doing everything within their power now to do it. There's lawsuits and dismiss suits and not dismiss suits and the like.
And private equity investment.
Which FSU is trying to raise a bunch of money now to either fund the escape or other things within their program to create more dollars for the getaway. Let's assume they both get out. Where should they land? And you can take them one by one, by the way. And I'm using those two now rather than North Carolina, Miami, and anybody else, because they're the ones that have brought lawsuits. Those are the two schools that have actually sued the Atlantic Coast Conference. So if they get out, what makes the most sense for them? For the conferences they're trying to get into.
Nice save.
Thank you. I almost knocked over everything in front of me. And
that was well done.
But you know what? I saved it, didn't
you
I?
You did. That's why I said nice save.
Yeah, it's called athleticism.
Instead of laughing is everything went to the floor.
Is scrambling all around. But if the two get out, where should they go? Best interest of them, and you can take them one by one if you want. Best interest of college football, because I got a lot of thoughts on this too. And the best interest in the conferences they would pursue. What's the best landing for everybody here?
Best interest for Florida State and Clemson and for the college football fan is that they land in the SEC, without a doubt. They fit it. There would be rivalries that would be just fantastic. I think there would be instant heat if Florida State was playing Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, LSU, obviously Florida, they already have that with, but Tennessee, whoever Florida State ended up in a pod with or whoever they were determined to play every year, I think there would be some instant rivalry, which is hard. It's hard to do that because rivalries, particularly in that sport, are built on decades, if not centuries, of hate. But I think Florida State, with its branding, and Florida State has played in enough big-time bowls that they've got at least some history with most SEC teams. They've run into them at some point. Obviously, they just came off of a two-game series with LSU. I think that Clemson would be the same thing. I think, you know, if Clemson and Florida started to play every year, it wouldn't take long for the animosity to build up. And, you know, same if Clemson was with Tennessee or Georgia, whoever. And obviously they play Georgia this year, so that would be a fun, natural new rivalry if they wanted to make that one an annual occurrence. So that's the best fit. It's not what I think would happen, but it would be the best thing for the schools involved and for the fan. But I don't know that – in fact, I don't believe that's where it ultimately will head.
Yeah, I think I think those two schools probably will wind up in the Southeastern Conference at some point. I think both of them. Now you're thinking, wait a minute, they've already got enough schools. Well, you never have enough. Those two schools have enough eyes that watch them on television. I really believe this. That the SEC schools would ultimately make more money. Even though it's split more ways, I think they would make more money by having FSU and Clemson in. And I think that's what this is all about. They're in the contiguous states, as Greg Sankey always talks about.
Yeah, you're already in the states.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's right. And I think you're right. North Carolina would continue that. But they're already in the states. I think there'd be more eyes on – there's a lot of – and people say, well, the SEC already has Florida, the state of Florida. Well, it's got one team. there's a lot of television eyes. I saw a stat the other day that FSU ranked fifth in the last however many years in eyes watching their games. Well, that's pretty good. And so why not? I think this belief that, you know, the SEC went and got Texas A&M, but that didn't stop them from getting Texas and Oklahoma. That's more eyes than Texas. Well, why not go get more eyes in Florida and more eyes in the Southeast? So I think those two schools, more than any other, I think those two schools will and should wind up in the Southeastern Conference. And without divisions now again, it's good that the tournament is 12 teams. By then, you know, it might even grow again to 14 or 16 because there's going to be so many teams that it'll be like baseball. So many teams that qualify, you got to get them in. But I think because of the eyes that watch FSU and Clemson, we can talk Big Ten and Big 12 and all this all we want. At the end of the day, the SEC will want those eyes in their league, and I think they're going to have them. Having said that, I do think the Big Ten, once the can of worms is open, so to speak, once it's stopped, I then think the Big Ten will go and poach. And my belief is the Big Ten will poach at least Miami, which is a very good academic school, which matters to the league, and gives them Florida, which they haven't had, and then something in the Mid-Atlantic region, my guess is probably North Carolina. So that would break up North Carolina and Duke and North Carolina and NC State and even North Carolina, Virginia. A lot of people think North Carolina and Virginia will go together. I don't. I think Miami and North Carolina will wind up in the Big Ten. I think when this thing all plays out, FSU and Clemson will wind up in the Southeastern Conference. Miami and North Carolina will wind up in the ACC, in the Big Ten, in my opinion. JJ, if Miami wound up in the Big Ten in that scenario, would you like it or not?
I'd love it. I would obviously want the SEC just because this is where I live. All my friends are Gator fans. I think it's more natural of rivals with those teams. But the Big Ten, man, it would be pretty badass playing Michigan, Ohio State, USC every year. I'd love that.
Yeah, I really do. I think that's where it's going to land. And by the way, then what does happen to NC State, Duke, Virginia, Georgia Tech? Then I don't know. And I hate to say this, but Hayes, I think the college football world that matters wouldn't care. I think when we head to the, you think it's going to be the two conferences breaking off. I think it's going to be a super league, with maybe more than just the two conferences. But I do think there's schools, and I think Wake Forest and Duke and Georgia Tech are among them, that are not going to be in that league. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I think there's going to be some real losers in this, unfortunately. But it's just, it's capitalism, and the money is going to be reserved to the schools that have generated the most interest in their programs over the years. And there's going to be some lucky schools that are in the SEC and the Big Ten that I think are going to be able to stay. I don't think they're going to kick schools out. So I think if you made the choice whenever you made it, whether it was 100 years ago or 50 years ago to join, or 20 years ago or 10 years ago to join the SEC or the Big Ten, I think you're going to be protected even if you're not one of those elite programs. But in terms of looking at it, what I'm starting to see more of is that the transition could be pretty dicey because the SEC and Big Ten don't really get anything from adding for a while with these deals. So no one has shown any interest in giving them more money for them adding teams. It's a big reason why the SEC stayed, surprisingly, at an 8-game conference schedule, because ESPN did not want to pony up to pay them for the 9th game. So they just were like, okay, well, we're not going to give it to you for free. We'll stay at 8. Well, I think that's sort of what they're going to run into here. So there is a possibility. What you're hearing is that Florida State, Clemson, the teams that do break away from the ACC first, may have to go to like the Big 12 just for maybe like 4 or 5 years until the SEC and Big Ten are at a point where it's more advantageous for them to add them. So that would be really clunky, you know, to go from the ACC to the Big 12, but you kind of know it's a temporary play before you get to one of the two big ones. Yeah. So,
and that could happen, but I mean, it's conceivable. But
there's really no there's no reason the SEC or Big Ten should do it now.
Yeah.
To add anybody, even if Florida State and Florida State and Clemson are rushing to get out because they don't want to be held to something
right.
until 2036. My guess is if this grant of rights ended in like 2028, they'd probably just stay in
and save
their money and try and get aligned with when the SEC and Big Ten might really be ready to expand again and reap the TV money that will come with it.
Well, there's a belief in some areas that ESPN has until next year to extend beyond 2027, or then it's over in 27. And ESPN controls that. If ESPN controls that, I wonder if the SEC has a say because they're certainly such partners. So we'll see. The more I think about this, I think sometimes we overthink it. I think FSU and Clemson to the SEC just makes too much sense. It makes sense for the schools. I think it makes sense for the conference.
But it made sense for FSU in 92, and they didn't do it.
That's right. They didn't. And I agree with that.
Now it may be the opposite of that, where Florida State wants it.
Well, they clearly want it.
But the conference doesn't.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
Well, clearly FSU wants. I don't think there's any debating that. It's just, if the SEC says no, it's not because of what happened in 92. It's because, to your point, it doesn't make sense to do it.
Right.
So,
and in a worst-case scenario, then Florida State, I do think, goes to eventually the Big Ten.
Yeah, me too. I do think this. And sometimes it's just what feels. In a weird, weird sort of way, Miami, Virginia Tech, North Carolina to the Big Ten, and I'm even throwing Miami in there, doesn't feel weird to me. Any of those schools to the SEC would feel weird to me. I don't know why. I don't know why North Carolina and Virginia to the Big Ten doesn't feel weird to me. Maybe because Maryland already went, but it doesn't feel odd to me. I've over the years, you always heard that the Big Ten coveted Georgia Tech because of that gigantic Atlanta market, and it's a very good ACC school. So I don't know. My gut tells me FSU and Clemson to the SEC feels right. Nobody else in that league to the SEC feels right to me, even though Georgia Tech used to be in it. And it just feels right. Sometimes I think we overthink it, so we'll see what winds up happening. I tell you what, it'll bear watching because there's a different story.
It's the biggest story, I mean, arguably, in terms of college football, it's one of the biggest stories we've had in 25 years. I mean, where is Florida State going to play its conference football? I mean, We've never had that real uncertainty of where is it going to land and is it going to be a good place for Florida State. I think it will be, but I do think ultimately it's going to be the Big Ten. The other part to this as well is the Big Ten and SEC working in conjunction together was something that I don't think we really saw coming
right.
because it had been contentious really up until about the last 3 or 4 months.
That's right.
If the SEC and Big Ten are working in conjunction, that's bad news for Florida State because if they're not, A, it eliminates any kind of a bidding war. And I still think if you're Florida State, you've got to be on guard that you may get out of an ACC where you get a full share to go to the bigger pie. But then you get to that bigger pie and they say, well, we'll let you in, but we're not going to give you a full share for 10 years.
Well, that's the other thing that's interesting, too. The ACC, when it took Cal, Stanford, SMU, aren't giving them a full share. The Big Ten, when it took Washington and Oregon, aren't giving them a full share. The SEC has not done that yet. The SEC haven't been recruiting you to come, but you don't get the full share. The SEC hasn't had to do that yet. So that's the interesting part is, would the SEC do what the Big Ten has done, what the ACC has done, what the Big 12 has done, take somebody at a partial payout, and would those teams accept that? Would FSU? I mean, I understand.
I don't think they have a choice.
Well, and that may be the answer. They may not have a choice to do it. But what I would wonder is, we haven't seen that in the SEC yet. It'll be interesting to see. All right, we'll take a break. I want to get back to the Jaguars. 641-1010 is our number to call. The shout today, what do you expect from Brian Thomas Jr.? Will he be a star? Will he be the best new receiver to come here since Jimmy Smith? Will he be another in the long line of good but not great? Will he be another bust from the first round like we've had so many of those? What do you think and why? That's our shout. That's our next topic. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM. You know you
make me wanna shout. Time to shout.
Woo!
Looking for the best shouter of the day. But you have to do it in 20 seconds. So let's shout.
All right. If you want to tell us what you think, let us know. 641-1010. Somebody's walking away with a I had the best shout of the day t-shirt. They're collector's items. They'll probably be worth millions.
I was going to say, are we seeing any of those on eBay yet for like 100 grand?
I think that would be where you start.
Right.
That would be the starting point. So 641-1010. If you want to join us for the shout, let us know that. We'd love to talk to you about that if you choose to get involved. If you look at the stats from last year, what surprised you the most about the passing game? Struggles?
I would say it's just really the injuries last year because of what we talked about earlier, losing Zay, who was so instrumental in keeping Calvin sort of knowing what he was supposed to be doing. So you didn't have him out there. Obviously, everything is sailing along. And then you lose Christian Kirk. So I think it was more, I would attribute it more to injuries than anything else in terms of breaking down why the passing game wasn't as strong as it probably should have been.
Yeah, I think, yeah, agreed. I will say this, and I've said this a lot of times, and maybe I'm making excuses for them. And again, if you want to join us, 641-1010, the number. And maybe I'm making excuses for him, but I do believe there's something to this. And no one wants to hear excuses, but I'm telling you, Hayes, they were 8-3, driving for a first possession score against Cincinnati when Christian Kirk got hurt. I think that injury affected him as much as any one thing, that including all four Trevor injuries. I thought it affected him as much as anything happened.
Well, he was averaging like 5.5 catches a game.
Right.
So you lose that. And again, you can speak to roster building in depth. They weren't prepared to have injury at the position. The receivers that stepped in made a bunch of mistakes, made really zero big plays, and certainly were a net negative
right.
in terms of their contribution once they were called upon. So, you know, I think it starts there. And then not only did you have a receiving core that started to break down, your quarterback started to break down.
Right.
And obviously he wasn't the same guy. So I think the hope is that Brian Thomas steps in, gives you the deep threat. Gabe Davis gives you some of that as well. And Christian Kirk and Evan Engram should be able to find a lot of open area in that short to intermediate range. And if they get all three of those zones working, and you do hit the occasional deep ball to Brian Thomas or Gabe Davis, now you've got an offense that really is able to keep the opponent off balance consistently in terms of what to stop through the air.
All right, let's go to the phones and say hello to Byron. Byron, let's kick this thing off. You've got 20 seconds now. Tell us what you expect from Brian Thomas Jr.
Hey guys. I expect the best from him, but I want to say this about the coaching staff. And, guys, I'm a Doug Peterson fan. But, guys, I think what you were talking about, the 8-3 thing, I think the Jaguars collapsed last year from injuries and under coaching. I think we need to get better conditioned, get a better offseason, and get in there and get tougher, man. And go Jags and Duval, but we need to get tougher next year, man. That's my sound off for this 20 seconds. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Byron. We appreciate that. Yeah, you know, yeah.
I think Brian Thomas is a tough kid. I mean,
you see him
blocking downfield a lot.
Right.
Plays with a ton of effort. He's big. He will gain good weight. I would think by year three, he's going to be more physical and stronger. But from an effort standpoint, which usually at the receiver position in terms of blocking, you're just looking for effort because a lot of guys won't give it,
yeah.
Even at this level. And I think you're going to see Brian Thomas as a very willing blocker, which should benefit the offense as well.
Calvin Ridley, by the way, led them in receiving yards. He was the only player to go over 1,000 yards, 1,016. He also led him in receiving touchdowns. He had 8 of them. Well, it doesn't seem like he had 8 touchdowns.
No.
It was a quiet 8, if I could say that. I mean,
it was a quiet 8. And, again, you think about the mistake. To me, the mistakes are what I remember more about Calvin Ridley than anything else. I mean, certainly he – He had moments where certainly he was a very productive player. But it still was surprising to me how he just mentally never gelled with what they wanted him to do. And you should never get deep into a season and still not really be sure what you're getting in terms of a route running standpoint from a player that's supposed to be your best talent.
Right.
And, you know, again, it'll be fascinating to see what Tennessee does with him. Are they able to coach him to a level to where he has more immediate success? And obviously he doesn't deal with the rust, so that's an advantage for Tennessee. He is a year older. But in looking at it, you know, that is going to be something that I think we're going to have to really key in on with Brian Thomas, is his understanding of what's being asked of him, because not everything can be a go route.
The backup receivers last year, Parker Washington.
Byron, you're looking pretty good here, by the way.
Byron's pretty good. If someone wants to challenge Byron, feel free to. The backup receiving game, Parker Washington had 16 catches for 132 yards. Tim Jones, 11 catches for 83 yards. Elijah Cooks, 3 catches for 38 yards. That's it, bro. As far as not counting running backs or tight ends. That's it. That's all. So that's one of the reasons I hated to see Zay Jones go. Now, listen, I think they're thinking, A, is he going to be happy as the fourth receiver? B, he probably isn't ever going to give you much on special teams. Tim Jones is a special teams ace. Johnny Cooks. Elijah Cooks is a pretty good special teams player. So interesting stuff. So, all right, let's squeeze in one. Let's squeeze in. Bob wants to kind of now we get some phone lines lined up. Bob wants to go.
Now it's a coin flip.
Bob W., you got it. Well, you got 20 seconds.
Yes, sir.
Go.
Yes, sir. Last week I called in, wanted a shameless plug for a free T-shirt. If you want Brian Thomas to make any impact, Press Taylor has to keep Trevor Lawrence on his feet, not on his butt, and let Trevor Etienne run the ball, and Brian will make a whole big impact.
All right, very good. I appreciate your patience and your persistence.
And it does have to start there. I mean, it has to start with the run and protecting Trevor, but that's the thing. Brian Thomas is the icing on what could be a beautiful cake if he becomes somebody that regularly does catch that 40-yard deep ball.
Brandon, you're up next. Brandon, you got 20 seconds. Go.
All right. I think Brian's going to kick the top off. It's going to help a lot with him and Gabe. They're both speed. That's probably the most speed that Trevor's had ever since he's been with Jacksonville. And then have Ingram, Etienne, and Kirk just beat all those inside routes. I think it's going to be really good. I think our offense is going to be really explosive next year. I'm super excited. Go deep ball.
I am too. Brandon, thanks. I am too, by the way. I do think this, to his point, the deep ball is probably more of a factor now than it probably has been in a long time.
Well, and he's bigger, too. That's the other thing. I mean, with Calvin's not an overly big guy. So, you know, I mean, I do think going from Calvin Ridley to Brian Thomas, it does give you a little bit. It gives Trevor a little bit of a bigger area to throw to.
Mike B. is up next. Hello, Mike. You got 20 seconds. How will Brian Thomas be?
Guys, I honestly think Brian Thomas is going to be a really good pick. I love the fact that we were able to get him, trade back to 23, and still get the guy who we were going after. I do agree with what Hayes just said. He's kind of like Ridley. He's got that explosiveness. He can take the top off the defense, but he is bigger. Across the years, I feel like he's just going to put on weight, get more physical. And I think he's a great pick. I think he's going to be a great addition to our offense, and go Jags.
Mike B., thanks for the call. Well done. So a handful of the calls came in here, did a really, really good job. We will pick a winner. We've got one segment to go. We'll have it for you after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Best Bet Monday on The Frangie Show with fantastic locations in Jacksonville, Orange Park, and now in St. Augustine. It's Best Bet.
A little bit of sad news in the college football world. Hootie Ingram, the longtime athletic director at Alabama and Florida State, was there throughout the 80s with the Noles. Died today at the age of 90. He was a legendary Alabama player and coach. And his last years in the job were at Alabama. He hired Gene Stallings, who got him a national title.
Yeah.
But honestly, and he was known for his Alabama years, 89 through 95. But I would say those years at FSU, he didn't hire Bowden. But he was there 81 through 88, I guess it was. And that's when FSU football came into prominence. I can remember, and I can tell you, Bowden even told all of us that he felt like in 86, he was on the hot seat. Do you know that?
I did not.
Bowden,
because he'd lost six straight to Florida.
Six straight to Florida. He lost. And they and hadn't been great in any of those years.
I by the way, I don't think a Florida or Florida State coach could survive that.
Yeah.
These days, no matter what was happening.
Not six.
Not six.
Because people get fired quicker than that now. But from 81, Florida State won four in a row from 77 through 80. And then the next 6 years, 81 through 86, Florida won all those games. And Bowden really worried. He said, listen, I've been hung in effigy in Morgantown, West Virginia. Is it going to happen again here in Tallahassee, Florida? And I remember he had that conversation. And Hootie said, nah, you know, we got your back, coach. And, well, I think the rest is history.
Oh, yeah.
The best decision Hootie Ingram – number one, he hired Gene Stallings, who won a national title at Alabama. But the best decision Hootie Ingram ever made at Florida State, Hayes, was the one he did make. And that was
– And sometimes those are your best decisions.
Yes, that's exactly right. Don't pull the plug on the coach that is about to take us on what remains, by the way, in my mind, still probably the greatest run I've ever seen a college team have in any sport. Florida State football for 14 consecutive years, 87 through 91, finished in the top four in America. The top
finish. Astonishing.
That's an astounding.
I mean, just to put that in perspective, how many more years would Georgia have to do it? They've been in, what would you guess? They've been in the top four in the country the last 4 years?
Probably four or five, yeah. It's finished in the top four, yeah.
Yeah, so another decade.
Another decade of that.
Yeah, yeah. Without a one pretty year amazing. Where you finish fifth.
I mean, it's really pretty amazing.
It's incredible.
87.
He could have easily won six, seven national titles.
Yeah, he won two.
Yeah.
They won 93 and 99. Or 93 and 2000?
93 and 99, right?
Right, that's right. So, yeah. But certainly could have won 2000. Certainly could have won 98. Certainly could have won 96.
2000, they shouldn't have even been in the title game. Let's be clear about that.
That was the year they lost Oklahoma.
Well, in Miami beat them in the regular season,
right? That's right.
Right.
That's right. And I agree with you. And by the way, I was in New Orleans, JJ, for that Florida-Miami game that year, the
Wasn't
Sugar Bowl.
Close.
I mean, Miami rolled them.
Great team.
They could have played
that
game. That
was a good Florida team.
Yeah, Florida was good. But they could have played that game 10 times.
Right.
And Miami would have won all 10.
It just looked like they were more physical and
by a mile.
Better.
Would have loved to see them play Oklahoma that year.
Yeah, that's right. And Oklahoma was the ultimate underdog. Oklahoma was never supposed to beat FSU.
Miami
13-2
destroyed Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think
year.
So too. I think
Oklahoma got lucky in the sense that Mark Richt left to take the Georgia job.
That's right.
Florida State's offense just wasn't into the game for whatever, you know.
Scored 2 points.
Yeah. And
didn't somebody get suspended?
Snoop Menace, right? Didn't play?
I think maybe that was the year. Yeah, you're
right. So they had, if Florida State had, if Mark Richt is still there for that, you know, and not leaving for Georgia, and Florida State would have won the game.
That was the year.
And Miami would have beaten them both.
But Florida State won it in 93-99, could have won 2000. Would have won 98. Sorry, Tennessee fans, if Winky doesn't get hurt.
Right.
That's not fair to Tennessee because they pounded everybody. The Tennessee 98 team, we've had this talk about how great they were defensively, how many good NFL players, and there were a ton of them. But they got some great breaks.
Oh.
I mean,
the Clint Stoner break is the break of all time.
Of all time. For people that don't know, Clint Stoner, the Arkansas quarterback, when they were putting the game away, he dropped back, tripped, put his hand on the ground with the ball in it to break his fall. And the ball came out, and if it's you and Tennessee got it and wound up winning the game. So
one of the biggest unforced errors I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah. So they had a lot of breaks and still found a way to. But give them credit.
They're
undefeated. They won a title.
Look, Florida has won three national titles. They lost a game in all three of those years. Sometimes you need luck and. You know, Florida certainly had their fair share too. I'm not suggesting they haven't, anyway, that 14 years in a row, what Bobby Bowden did, it's
pretty amazing.
It's remarkable. Yeah, so that's cool that you gave Hootie Ingram a nice tribute.
Hootie Ingram, the dead of the age of 90. Folks, that's our program. Tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. Don't go anywhere, though. Hacker After Dark Before Dark comes up in just a minute. We're out of here. For Hayes and JJ, I'm Frank Francis. So long.